across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
And good morning. Welcome back to Up North News Radio. 7:06 on this Wednesday, January 24th, and in just a couple of moments, our conversation with Senator Tammy Baldwin about a big infrastructure project up north that she helped fund, and also an update on a very controversial matter involving border security and immigration. But before that, it's one of those days, again, either side of the freezing mark, freezing drizzle or fog is possible. So let's get a quick look at the statewide forecast from Civic Media meteorologist Brittany Merlot. Brittany, good morning.
Good morning, everyone. Yeah, we've got a big cloud sitting on the ground out there. It's not going anywhere.
Greg, are you hearing that too?
I am. Brittany, what's going on?
I am. Hey, Brittany, your microphone makes it sound like you are you're a leprechaun.
A child.
It's got some static, and it's got a very high pitch to it. Were you making party tapes again for somebody?
Party tapes. Okay. Sorry.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, that is not a great connection there. Hey, now. All right. Brittany, we apologize. It's we'll have to restore the connection. You want to try to jump back on at 7:20 maybe? Why don't you do that? We're going to talk to Senator Baldwin.
Like,
she just gives us a thumbs up like, I'm not going to sound like that anymore. No, thank you. So, okay. Well, thanks, Brittany. Come on back in and here, because we do want to get to Senator Baldwin. So I will simply tell you, drive safe on the roads. There is dense fog in places. Some of it is freezing. Temperatures range from 31 here on Lake Wissota to 28 in Park Falls to 33 in La Crosse, 32 in Madison. So drive with care, and we'll get a full update on your forecast. Well, you get your local forecast, you know, throughout the course of the day here across the Civic Media Radio Network. Senator Tammy Baldwin, thank you so much for being here. How are you?
I'm well. It's great to join you.
It's nice to have you here. Thank you again for your time. And we're going to start, of course, by talking infrastructure. You know, the president is coming to Superior once again to use the Blatnik Bridge as a backdrop. And I've been describing it as a victory lap. I remember when he stopped there the day after the State of the Union address in 2022, the bipartisan infrastructure law had just passed. And so now you've played a role in making sure that this visit is a victory lap. Tell us more about it.
Absolutely. You know, starting with working on putting together the bipartisan infrastructure law and voting to pass it, it was very clear to me that this was a major bridge, a major piece of infrastructure that needed attention. And, you know, I'll start with just safety. This bridge had been around since the 1960s. There's some concerns about its structural stability. And it also has a very dangerous sort of outlet into a very residential neighborhood in Superior and needs some significant design improvements. So safety, of course, is first and foremost in my role as a United States Senator, but also just the economy. This is, 33,000 vehicles a day go over this bridge. This is about commerce. This is about the economy. This is about our way of life and accessing what we need for commerce, but as well, for recreation. I've used that bridge many, many times. And so it's really an important piece of infrastructure. And in terms of sort of following this on, we passed the infrastructure law. It was very clear that the Blatnik Bridge needed to be replaced and rebuilt. And it was also very clear that it was going to be a very expensive undertaking, very complex, very expensive, and that it was appropriate for there to be a federal role as well as the state, the two states contributing their shares. And it wasn't going to happen without significant federal support. And so I've been nudging, that's probably the Wisconsin nice way of saying
it is,
I've been nudging
it?
Yes. The administration. I've been a squeaky wheel. That's a good pun for transportation infrastructure project. Every time, the first round grant competition, they didn't get any money. We were very fearful. So we kind of doubled down, and this is such great news.
It is, along with all of the other projects that are going to get done because of this law. Yet, despite the moniker of being a bipartisan infrastructure law, it did not gain Republican votes from here in Wisconsin. And in fact, I wonder if you weren't more than a little amused when a Minnesota Congressman, Pete Stauber, really talked up the funding yesterday, saying he had long fought for these funds. And everybody was throwing back in his face his comment from a couple of years back when he called the bipartisan infrastructure bill the path towards socialism. It seems like an aggressive new tactic to call out the Republicans who, you know, how did Nancy Pelosi put it? Vote no and take the dough.
Exactly. You know, the legacy of that particular district that he represents, that was Blatnick's district. That was Jim Oberstar's district. Jim Oberstar was, I think, either legislative director or chief of staff to Blatnick.
And then the longtime chair of transportation as well.
Exactly. Yes. No, Jim Oberstar was just known for his dedication to safe, efficient infrastructure. And to see somebody take such a different direction from that same district is so disappointing.
And James Oberstar worked so well with Dave Obey when he represented the 7th District here up north. And so I don't think they would hesitate if either one were still active in Washington about calling out those who would vote no against such necessary infrastructure. Before I run out of time, we've dealt with the things that are here at home. There are some other concerns that I wanted to ask about. One deals with strengthening the border, and you have frequently talked about guarding against fentanyl trafficking. What is happening with your initiatives on that level?
Yeah, so let me just start with the fentanyl epidemic. It is an epidemic, and it is, despite our number of miles from the southern border, it is something that impacts Wisconsinites. The last year for which they have full numbers, 2022, we had over 1,400 opioid-related deaths, many of those related to fentanyl overdoses. And we need an all-hands-on-deck approach. And that means everything from looking at the precursor chemicals that come from China and are then used by the drug cartels in Mexico to make illegal pills that are often laced with fentanyl. And it also means getting better detection and interdiction at the southern border. Now, there's a larger southern border debate here that's very important. Of course, we need a secure and orderly southern border. But a big piece of what we do at the border is trying to make sure that dangerous and illegal drugs do not get into our country. And so there are a number of measures. We just introduced the Stop Fentanyl at the Border bill as a freestanding bill, but I hope it will be incorporated in this larger southern border package, which would strengthen our border patrol to be able to do a better job of interdicting these dangerous drugs, but also upgrading our technology. You know how when you go to an airport, they scan your luggage, they don't have to open it up to see what's inside? Well, there's technology that allows us to do that with freight traffic, with trucks. And we could have insight into a much greater percentage of the traffic, the vehicular traffic coming in and out of our ports of entry if we upgrade our technology. And that's what we're fighting to do. But again, all hands on deck. We also have to face the demand side and have prevention, treatment, and recovery services available in Wisconsin and throughout the country. But this is a scourge, and we need to do everything we can to prevent it coming in from our southern border.
And as far as that larger package that the three of your colleagues, Senators Murphy, Lankford, and Sinema, a Democrat, a Republican, Independent, are working on, I certainly don't want to give anybody false hope, but would you say you are in the cautiously optimistic range, or that it's still too soon to tell?
Yeah, so you know, we have been getting regular readouts of the progress made. And, you know, as of last week, they still hadn't reached final agreements, but I think that they've come to some agreements that are being drafted as we speak. Now we have to see whether we can get the votes necessary in the Senate to further it. But there's been some substantial bipartisan agreements. And it's a reminder that I always like to make. In the Senate, you can't pass a bill without bipartisan support. We need 60 votes to pass legislation. And in the House, they have been working in a very partisan manner with the majority Republicans really excluding Democrats from the discussion. Well, that's not going to work if you want something to pass both houses. So we think we've put together something that can pass both houses and ultimately wind up on the president's desk. And we're going to keep on pushing.
And closing with the Blatnik Bridge and the president being there, the vice president coming earlier this week, the Treasury Secretary coming to Wisconsin on Friday. What signal is the Biden administration, the Biden campaign, sending to Wisconsin voters?
That Wisconsin voters are front of mind. And, you know, the idea that this big announcement with the Blatnik Bridge started with a trip that the president took to Superior before there was even an application for funding, knowing that this was an example of U.S. infrastructure that needed to be upgraded, to be rebuilt, to be safe. He cares about our economy. He cares about our safety. And I think that's what you're seeing and hearing.
Senator Tammy Baldwin, thank you so much again for your time. Always great to catch up with you.
Great to catch up with you.
One of the things I especially enjoyed in being able to bring that conversation to you was a long, long sought and rare grown up update about the border. We're still hearing the just tired phrase of, you know, open borders, and Joe Biden wants open borders. Democrats want open borders. No, they want a cohesive, a credible border security and immigration policy. It isn't just a matter of digging a moat, which is essentially all we ever hear about. It's got to be comprehensive. It's got to allow for immigration reform. Take one look at the worker shortages that we have in this country with proper vetting. We're way overdue for upgraded border security, getting back to 9/11. But we need to do it in a way that's grown up and doesn't involve just an endless chain of photo ops at the southern border. Again, if you missed it earlier, Britney's album Oops, I Did It Again was certified diamond, selling over 10 million copies on this day in 2005. So let's try this again. Let's try Brittany Merlot and get a feel on what the forecast is going to be looking like with some dense fog, freezing drizzle out there. Brittany, how are you sounding now these days?
You tell me. How do I sound?
Hey, you sound like Brittany Merlot again.
Yay. Oh, my goodness. That was weird because you guys sounded interesting to me, too. It had a crackle weirdness. So
okay. Did we sound like Oompa Loompas?
We were not Oompa Loompas. Hopefully not. All right. Tell us now, belatedly, what are we looking at out there?
Yeah. So we're not seeing much because there's a cloud on the ground. I'm talking visibility is reduced to near zero, especially in towards Madison and Richland Center, even into the Dells as well. Your visibility is really struggling as that fog is dense. Now, keep in mind, temperatures in those areas, too, are right around the freezing mark. So freezing fog is not ruled out. Mm. What that means is, really, I'm concerned about your stairs, your patio, your parking lot, the sidewalks, stuff like that, because they're probably not treated at the moment. The roads, however, should be pretty decent. I haven't seen many crash reports coming in just yet, but in the back door, right now into Iowa, it's starting to freezing rain and rain starting to push on in. So southern parts of the state will see that start to arrive around 9 a.m. And that's going to linger until around 1, so ending around lunch or so. But that right now, we're pushing as freezing rain as our temperatures are below freezing. But thankfully, we are going to climb to the mid-30s, especially into the southern half of the state today. So that'll flip to regular rain for a majority of us. But just as it pushes in early, keep in mind ice accumulations could be possible into some spots, especially those bridges. They freeze first.
Yeah, you got to be so careful with this, Brittany. And on the other hand, no, not the other hand, but I'm thankful that, you know, we're not suffering to the extent that other parts of the country are between the flash flooding and the freezing rain. It's been a rather ugly week out there weatherwise.
It sure has. And it's not going to stop here. So heavy rain headed our way tomorrow. We'll talk more about that. But for right now, let's just get through the fog and the little freezing temperatures for right now.
All right, Brittany, thanks so much. Have a great day.
You too.
Glad you sound like yourself again. Not an Oompa Loompa. Technology. Ain't nothing like it. All right. As those of you watching on social media saw, Heather Dubois-Bornon and Christian Phelps from the Wisconsin Public Education Network join us now for our weekly homeroom segment where we talk about public education in Wisconsin, the importance of supporting it, holding lawmakers accountable for supporting our kids. So we're going to talk a bit about this year's annual education conference. And then coming up in our second half hour, talk to a couple of local folks about the referendum issues that are going to be coming up already in February and April for school districts that, you know, could certainly use more support from our legislature. Heather, Christian, good morning. How are you guys?
Great. Good to see you.
Yeah, nice to see you. And it was nice to see you down in Milwaukee at the annual education convention. Heather, you know, hundreds of fellow educators around. I certainly felt like it was a good battery recharger for folks who are constantly, you know, fighting on behalf of our kids. What was your sense of the convention and, you know, any particular issues that you thought were really emphasized there?
Yeah, thanks for having us on, Pat. We are always super energized by that event. For those who don't know, every year in the coldest week of the year, the Wisconsin Association of School Boards, the Wisconsin Association of School Business Officials, and the Wisconsin Association of School District Administrators hold what is the biggest education conference in the state. They call it the Joint State Education Convention. And we always attend to listen and learn and get our finger on the pulse about all of the concerns that school board members and district leaders and business officials are feeling and hearing across the state. And wow, we walked away with a lot to think about and a lot of really concerning stories about the challenges that districts are facing. Most pressingly and most kind of jarringly was the crazy number of districts that are going to go to referenda this year. I think that we should expect to see a record number of referenda again. And in one of the presentations that we went to, a full third of districts who responded to a survey that the WASBO put out shared that they are either confirmed or likely to go to referenda this year.
This, despite the state budget debate last year, where Governor Evers fought for and got a big increase in funding for public education, but at the cost of a very large increase in funding for voucher schools as well. So, Christian, with that being the main headline, that there was going to be more state support for public school districts, how does that jive with the fact that we're going to again see a record number of districts go to referendum?
Well, I think part of it and what we kept hearing over and over from people is that each year does not live in a vacuum. It comes after the previous year. And one of the conversations I had that stood out from the convention was from somebody who had been to the convention in the past as an educator and a school board member more than 10, 15 years ago, prior to Act 10 and prior to the huge increases in new voucher programs in Wisconsin that have continued to balloon to the point where they're really just out of control now. And then now. And she said that what used to be really kind of a party is now sort of a space for what she views as building quiet solidarity. The reality is that her district, like every single district in Wisconsin, did not see an inflationary increase. And that's despite the fact that we have a multi-billion dollar surplus just sitting around in Madison, not going to public schools or kids. And the amount that districts are having to then siphon off of their own budget to send to private schools that can play by their own rules has ballooned. And so, you know, she, like many people we talked to, were kind of nervous about the narrative that public schools had gotten an increase, when in reality, relative to inflation, they got yet another cut, and they're looking at a 16th consecutive year of falling behind inflation. And they've already done the belt tightening and the corner cutting that they can do. At this point, they need their community to step up again and sort of fill the gaps that they really shouldn't have to in the first place, but that Wisconsin communities are going to have to fill in order to support kids locally.
Yeah, and I can't believe that for going on 20 years now since I first ran for office, that we've had to say to people, well, you got more money than last year. Well, yeah, even a dollar more is more money, but if it doesn't keep up with inflation, you're not actually getting more money. If you're not keeping up with inflation, you're actually getting cut, Heather. And we're going to talk in our next segment a bit about a couple of the districts. We're going to be talking, Heather, with folks from, is it Menominee and Burlington?
Yeah, I believe so. I'm looking forward to hearing their stories. And I think they really reflect what we heard from folks all around the state at this convention, which is that when the state doesn't do its job by meeting the needs of the public schools that our constitution requires us to serve, it really falls on local communities to fill in those gaps. And what we're seeing around the state is when your community can't or won't or doesn't pass that referenda, our gaps just get wider and wider. And
exactly.
So we're really at risk here, and we hope people step up and hear these stories and take action.
All right, we'll have more of that in just a bit. You're up north.
Before you go, there's something I want you to have.
Oh, it's beautiful.
All right, we're not going to play this all the way to the chorus, so nobody's going to have to go, bum, bum, bum. You can do that in the silence of your own car as you're heading to work here along the Civic Media Radio Network. But Neil Diamond, 83 years old today, good birthday boy that he is. As we were talking about music a little bit earlier, and I was talking about Ray Stevens, and then I mentioned My Girl Bill. And Roger, thank you for the correction. My Girl Bill was from Jim Stafford, and I do occasionally get those mixed up, and I apologize. Rob from Tigerton checks in, wishing us good morning, saying it's 30 in Tigerton, some light fog, some slippery spots on the roads, especially some of the county and town roads. And again, we welcome your updates. You can just go to one of the Facebook feeds, Up North News or Civic Media, where you can see a live video feed of what we do. The Up North News daily newsletter came out early this morning. It included my article on some of the big takeaways from last night's State of the State address. And Christina also has an article about the state-by-state rankings of hospitals and how Wisconsin hospitals had a big jump in the newest national rankings. Find out those details and more by signing up for our newsletter. Head over to upnorthnewswi.com, Up North News being a separate entity from Civic Media, but proud to partner with them for these 2 hours every weekday morning, where we can do things like talk to some of our favorite educators in our Wednesday homeroom segment. So we've got Heather Dubois-Boren on and Christian Phelps from the Wisconsin Public Education Network, and joined now by Chris Trottier of the Burlington School District, one of, we have to say, many school districts that are planning referendum issues either in February or April. Chris, welcome to the conversation. Good morning to you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So we had set this up in our prior segment, Heather and Christian, talking about that while the last state budget did include an overall increase in public school funding, on a district-by-district basis, it varied a lot. In some cases, there was hardly an increase at all, or maybe even less than that. What's the situation in Burlington that led to the referendum that you're planning there?
I think it's similar to all the districts in the state of Wisconsin, where, you go back to the agreement with Tommy Thompson in 93, where there was a commitment to ensure that schools were funded and at the CPI level that then ended in what, about 2006, 2007. And over time, it's just been a year, you know, you add Act 10 in there in 2010, and schools just haven't been funded at the consumer price index and keeping up with inflation. And this is a byproduct of years of decisions, years of lack of investment, and years of lack of commitment to public schools.
What is the referendum history in Burlington? Have there been other issues recently, or is this the first one in a while?
Oh, that's a great question. As a community member, I was a part of a referendum, I'm trying to think, 19, I believe, November of 19, they went for a capital referendum for some major building projects, build a new middle school, and other safety and security issues around the district. They have not gone to an operational referendum. This is the first year, the first time they have done that. So this is really, when it comes to asking for additional dollars, this is the first time the Burlington School District is seeking any money above the revenue limit authority. And they have a history, too, of making wise, strong financial decisions. They under-levied for years to manage the impact on the taxpayers. And when you couple that with not funding schools at inflationary rates, the cuts that happened post Act 10 on the revenue limits, and then, you know, obviously the third piece was that under levy, this is what you get. I mean, it's pretty basic math, right?
The math isn't mathing right now for a lot of school districts. And Heather, we should, for folks that don't follow these types of issues closely, explain that we're talking about two different types of school referendum issues. Most people are familiar with the one of, oh, you want to build an entire new school, or you want to make a big addition or whatever. Then you're talking about the referendums to basically just keep the lights on. You're not building anything new. It's just the cost to operate the schools on a day-by-day basis. And that's where we're really seeing a big uptick, right, Heather?
Exactly. I mean, those operating referenda that Chris mentioned are the ones that we're really seeing an increase to. And in fact, one of the very shocking things that I learned at the State Education Convention last week was that since those revenue limits were imposed on districts in 1994, 82% of districts have had to go to referenda, asking voters to raise taxes on themselves to fill that gap that isn't covered by adequate state aid. And the cumulative impact of this is such that we're currently over $3,000 per pupil behind where we should be just to keep pace with inflation since 2009. And so that's 16 full years of less than inflationary increase. And the pittance that public schools got in the last budget, which was $325 per pupil, didn't go anywhere near closing that gap and wasn't even enough to keep pace with inflation from last year, when we have to remind everyone public schools got a $0 increase in the last budget. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, We're facing a fiscal cliff here, and districts all over the state are in the position that Burlington is in, where they have budgeted conservatively and responsibly and done the best they could with what they had, but something's got to give, and these kids aren't going to educate themselves.
Well, Christian, it's all about the framing of this. When a school district, you know, taxes at its maximum level and still can't operate, the framing we've been hearing for years is, well, the schools must be spending too much to have, you know, they're maxed out on taxes. They must be spending too much. No, if you're going all these years and a maximum spending level isn't enough for day-to-day operations, that sounds more to me like it's the legislature that consistently is underfunding just basic operation of schools, that it is not a spending problem. It is, in fact, a revenue problem from Madison.
That's exactly right. And there is a short-term and a long-term sort of problem and solution that I think people should have in mind. I mean, first of all, like, if you don't work in your local public school or have a kid that attends it right now, you know, talk to the people who do. I don't think that there are a lot of people who have a public school experience in Wisconsin right now who were really turned off by how overfunded the schools are and overpaid our excellent teachers are. I mean, so that that narrative really does not hold up. And people in Wisconsin across the board really support our educators and understand the importance of the work they do, and they want to support them. So in the short term, people have to step in and fill the gaps. And by and large, they do. But in the long term, this is not sustainable. And you're exactly right that the legislature is the one that has a responsibility constitutionally and morally to make referenda obsolete in the long run. I think local communities in Wisconsin can send the legislature a message by passing referenda to say, we actually want you to do that job that you've been sort of abdicating for the last 16 years. One thing that kind of stands out in my memory is this report from Forward Analytics that came out last fall that showed that 100 school districts in Wisconsin are relying on referendum funds to fund at least 10% of their overall education costs. I mean, think about that. That's just to maintain the way things currently are in those districts, to have 10% of that be funded by a local referendum when there are so many billions of dollars not going to those public schools from the state level. I think we need to have a multilateral approach and a short-term, long-term approach in Wisconsin. Fund the schools now and then actually advocate for the state to do better next time.
That's Christian Phelps from the Wisconsin Public Education Network, along with Heather Dubois-Bornon. Chris Trotter from Vote Yes for Burlington Schools is with us as well, Chris. So now, what is Chris, is the Burlington referendum in February or April?
It is February 20th.
February 20th. So yep. It is coming up. So we've been talking about the messaging in terms of the legislature's responsibilities. That's not necessarily how referendum issues are framed at the local level. What is the basic message that Vote Yes for Burlington Schools is sharing with the community, especially those folks who maybe are skeptical or need to know more information? What's your message to them?
Well, I think, you know, great schools equal great communities. As I'm sitting here with Christian, you know, public schools unite us. These aren't conversations about our schools. We know that the school funding and finance model is conservative in nature and keeps costs down and keeps the impact on taxpayers down. It has gone to obviously the extreme, but this is about investing in kids. This is about investing in our community. This is really asking the question, what do we want our community to be? And we can all have disagreements around policy and whether our schools are effective, but we can do that at a higher level if we do it together. But we have to keep the lights on, and we have to make sure buses run, and we have to make sure that we're attracting the best talent to our communities, which is teachers and adults. And they need to have a viable living wage because, you know what, there are many communities where teachers can't even afford some of the housing. And our teachers deserve our investment. But this really boils down to the type of community we want to be, who we want to, you know, emulate, and really who we want to become.
I know that at a district-by-district level, sometimes it's very hard for the taxpayers there to see how much of their property tax bill, which appears to be going to the public school district, is actually going to the school choice program, to voucher schools, and in my terminology, is being skimmed off the top and cheating our public schools. Is that something that is readily apparent, and is that part of, you know, what needs to be conveyed to the voters in Burlington as well?
Yeah, and first, let's back up a second. The legislature, they made a decision to not only increase funding for vouchers, but they did it at a higher rate than open enrollment for students. So that's another conversation for another day. But yes, that is a factor. You know, we have quality private schools in our community that you know, create another opportunity. And when dollars are leaving the public schools, it's impacting them too, because there are shared services, there are shared opportunities when you work collaboratively in the best interest of the community and kids that could be impacted.
Would you say that the work that you're doing, as well as all the other districts going to referendum, is it helped or harmed? I can't imagine it'd be harmed. Is it helped at all by noting that the legislature has been sitting literally on billions of dollars, up to $7 billion now for years, plural, and hasn't made any kind of investment in education. Does that legislative inaction play into this at all?
It all depends on your audience. It resonates with some. I think when they look at the math and the math, to explain the finance formula, public school formula, and how dollars are allocated to schools and where the revenue comes from, is difficult. And when you talk through it with taxpayers and you talk about the things that we're discussing here, it resonates with some. I know that other districts, including, you know, and Burlington, are starting to see the underfunding and the impact, but it doesn't resonate with all. And our focus is really to drive home the message that public schools unite us. This is about community. This is about an investment in kids and really asking, you know, who, do we want to be a destination community?
I can hear Heather typing furiously over here because I know that she wants people to know that they can go to the Wisconsin Public Education Network website, which is wisconsinnetwork.org. And is it slash accountability that gets you that information about where your tax dollar is actually going?
Yeah, we have a new tool in the red box on that page, wisconsinnetwork.org/accountability, where you can click on your district and see how much vouchers in independent charter schools are costing local public schools, what the local tax impact is of those programs.
And Christian's doing that right now. Christian, how much went to private schools from the Burlington Public School budget last year?
$1.79 million. In that one district alone that could have gone to the public schools in Burlington went to private and privately operated schools in the single school year.
So now, again, that may not necessarily be the message that's going toward a local referendum, but for those of us who are looking at this through a statewide lens, you can't help but make note of where the legislature is falling short, forcing people like Chris and all of his neighbors to go to the voters and explain the importance of voting for these referenda to continue to keep these great schools in operation. Chris Trotter, thank you so much for joining us. Good luck with the referendum.
Yeah, you bet.
Heather and Christian, good to have you here as well on Homeroom. We'll talk to you again real soon. Yeah. And we'll have Todd Alba joining us from up north in Stevens Point next. You're up north. Reaching out. I've been off and down and out, and that's a fact. I'm going mad. Who'd you bring us, Mr. Bach?
This is a band called Daddy Whiskers, and this song's called Going Back to Shawano.
Oh, yeah, I misspoke. I said Stevens Point. I meant Shawano, and that's where we find one Todd Alba. Mr. Alba, what are you doing up in Shawano?
I did not know there was a song about
Neither
Shawano.
Did I. I just typed in songs about Shawano, and I'm like, it's good, too.
Well, you know, I can finally technically say I'm joining you from up north because I'm about 2 miles north of Highway 29 in beautiful Shawano, Wisconsin, just about 30 miles northwest-ish.
You look so cozy there. You look like you're in a nice little cottage, you know, with the
I'm on the back porch of my dad and stepmom's house here in Shawano, Wisconsin.
It's adorable. Oh my goodness.
So it's jealous.
He's even got a red hat. He's got his flannel. He's got a red hat. It's not a MAGA hat. It's a Wisconsin badger. But still, it's a red hat.
It's a red hat that says "Make Wisconsin Cozy Again."
That's good, Greg. I like that.
Yeah. Hey, before I forget, we got a note on the text line asking about that website we mentioned at the end of the segment. And again, the Wisconsin Public Education Network, that's a mouthful. Their website is simply wisconsinnetwork.org. So wisconsinnetwork.org. You can get there from their homepage, but if you happen to put in wisconsinnetwork.org/accountability, because that's their whole project is accountability, make these legislators accountable, and you can see right there how much money that you thought was going to your public school district is being skimmed off the top, going to voucher schools. And if more people knew how much of their money was going there, there'd be a sea change in some of these outcomes, especially once we get fair maps. Even in places like Shawano, I'm convinced that fairer maps are going to lead to more competitive races.
Yeah, I've seen both the Republican and Democratic suggestions for maps. And yeah, I mean, Shawnee County certainly changes who would represent them a little bit. We'll see what the courts say. But no, I was up here with your little family stuff yesterday. Trigvi Olson did a great job guest hosting the show yesterday for me. And then I was in our Green Bay studios for Civic Media, WGBW, and co-anchored the State of the State last night with Terry Bell at our world headquarters down in Madison. And then I stayed around. Pete Swaba said, well, you want to stick around and do Oscar news? And so I was on Pete Swaba's show for an hour last night. And we also have Mike Clemens coming on talking about the Bucks change in coaching. So I've been everywhere, man. And later on today, I'm going to be joining you. I'm continuing my trek across the state. I will be over in Wausau at the Bull Falls studio today. And we have Dr. Greta Stock, who is the dean of UW-Stevens Point, Wausau. She is going to join us. And also Jeff Nania, an author who has done a lot of books about northern Wisconsin. And, of course, the great Chad Holmes of the Chad Holmes Show, located in Wausau. And these two dudes named Pat and Trigvi also will join us for our Wednesday conversation. So a big show from the north central part of the state.
And this is how a nickname was born. Todd, the ambassador, Alba, ambassador of civic media, making a tour throughout the state.
We call him the Todd Father. I'm going to start calling you the Tour Father.
I love it. But here's the thing, guys. You know, I've been all over the state, you know, so far. And I think it's just a great reminder. Because as if it was a dude I talked to that I had no idea who he was last night at about 11:30 after the State of the State at Quick Trip, over in Green Bay, or just folks you run into here in Shawnee. When you talk to real people across the state, you realize that we're so much more alike than we have differences. Whether you're people in Burlington or Madison or Lake Wissota, we just want good things for our community, like good public schools. And you didn't ask me the question, but I'll answer it anyway. What was one of my big takeaways from the State of the State last night?
Hold that thought. I got a note. I got to read to you. All right. Todd, what were your takeaways from the State of the State address last night?
Actually, hold on one second, Pat. I have to first thing. Pat, I was to remind you to ask Todd his thoughts on the State of the State address.
Oh, you're right. You're right. Okay. Hey, Todd, what were your big takeaways from the State of the State?
Thank you so very much for asking.
You're welcome.
One of the things was Republican Senate Leader Devin Lemahieu saying, oh, we have all this money. We've given people, we have this big, you know, surplus. We have to give this back to people in the form of checks. Both parties have done it, Republicans more so than Democrats over the years. But again, to your point of your previous guests who are great folks, about $300 increase per pupil to public school students, lots more to private school students. And remember, the public schools have to take everybody. And also not to mention the special needs kids who are underfunded. So here's the question I asked last night. I'll repeat it again this morning. Do you think that your public schools are properly funded? Because we're about to go into a record number of local referendums. Why is that? But largely because the state of Wisconsin, the legislature, the Republicans are not properly funding our public schools. Meanwhile, $4 billion are sitting in the old state coffers in Madison of our tax money.
That's right. And again, with the voucher schools, as the investigative journalism arm Wisconsin Watch has reported on frequently, these voucher schools claim that, you know, they can take everybody, that they don't discriminate, when, you know, the record shows otherwise. And one of the things I put up on social media yesterday was when Arkansas Governor Sarah Huckabee Sanders was meeting with folks from voucher schools, and she's trying to talk up, you know, voucher school, religious school funding. And the people who were running the schools were bristling at the notion that they can't be allowed to discriminate. One of them was like, whoa, of course we discriminate. We're a Christian school. Which I wonder, does that person actually go to church and say, oh yeah, we're Christians, we discriminate? Not great advertising for your cause.
There's a new article out last night that I was reading, maybe talk about today if we have time, that evangelical pastors are now hearing from other pastors that their congregants are admonishing them for using the Bible, saying, where did you get that liberal stuff?
Yes.
The words of Jesus. Oh. I'm not making this up. The teachings of Jesus Christ are
too liberal.
Right. Mm-hmm. It comes from the Sermon on the Mount, the whole turn the other cheek thing. I want to get this in quick because I thought this was the best line of Evers' speech last night when he was talking about women's reproductive freedoms and what he wants to do to continue to defend and protect that. He said, you know, the Republican nominee for governor last year, Tim Michels, and he called him by name, Tim Michels, wanted to undo this and a lot more. you might have noticed he's not here giving the speech tonight.
Ooh, nice.
I thought that was a great line by
Oplander,
Tony Evers.
Oplander can get spicy. He'll get spicy when he gets a little like,
He will. All right. For more of that, Todd Alba joins you at noon here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Mr. Alba, safe travels. Have fun.
Lovely to be up north finally.
I know. Great to have you here. Have a great day. Mr. Bach, talk to you tomorrow.
Bye.
All right. And thank you for joining us tomorrow. Dr. Kristen Lyerly will join us and talk about the increase in legislation, including in Wisconsin, that would micromanage exactly how women must handle their pregnancy complications. Is that really a role for state law? That's coming up tomorrow on Up North News Radio on the Civic Media Radio Network. Have a great day.